Are you looking to keep up with key trends in the marketplace? Are you striving to maintain your competitive edge at work? Looking for a career change but unsure about your next move? The Skillsharp podcast is here to help you. Join industry insiders Brian, Todd, and Mike, who will guide you through new strategies for career success.
Don't forget to visit our website at skill-sharp.com to subscribe and gain access to all of our content. Stay sharp.
Welcome to Skillsharp. We're happy to have you. We have some wonderful guests here that are going to share their thoughts on how to discover and live your professional dreams. Let's welcome Rich Harrigan and LeBriant Robinson to the stage. Gentlemen.
Hey, thank you for having
me. Yeah, so number one, we know that you have been longtime friends and you share passion in terms of coaching, but you also are business partners on the other side. So, Richard, if you want to start, just give us a brief overview of your background, where you're from, and we'll go to LeBriant from there.
No problem, Brian. And once again, thank you for having us. Well, I'm Rich Harrigan, born and raised Brooklyn, New York, father of three young men. At times they're young men, sometimes they're just young. once I got them out of high school and all into college, football has been my lifelong dream to be, always be involved. That didn't always pay the bills unless you moved up the ranks and you got to where you wanted to go. I'm a civil engineer, ready to retire. I've been trying to retire for the last year and a half, but COVID's been taking care of that. Now right around the corner from it. But basically I went to UMass Amherst, got my engineering degree, and lived up in the Boston area for a while and found my way back to New York. So I started coaching, and I got back into coaching with the women's pro football team in New York. And it's been a hell of a ride since then in the women's football league. But now that I'm about to retire, I'm not retiring from working, just working for somebody. And LB and I have some serious plans to, change some lives with our company called Rasco. And with some things that he's doing also with some group homes. And we're going to ride this out together, man. And that's basically it right now. So I'm trying to retire before I'm 65. So, and I'm getting close. So I'm good.
I'm LeBriant Robinson. I was born and raised in Salisbury, Maryland. I went to Delaware State College after high school in Salisbury, Maryland. I played football. I went down a four-year scholarship. I met my wife there for 30 years. I left Delaware State and I got drafted by the Washington Redskins. So I was with them for a year. I went out and did a moment with the Cowboys and went out to Canada. Played in Canada, CFAF rather. And I had a great time. I met Rich coaching at Jersey Coach Academy, which is a junior college organization that coached men. And we found out that we were frat brothers, and he introduced me to women's football. At first, I thought he was joking, but, it came around. He was serious, and we got together with the New York Sharks, and we've been doing it for a couple of years and thought this was the great time to start our own team and come closer to home. And that's what we're doing with the Tri-State Warriors. And as well, I work with kids. I'm also a dean, eighth grade dean at Memphis Street Academy in Philly. So, it's always about the kids. It's always working with the younger minded.
LB, when were you with the Redskins? I'm going to see if you know
anybody. 1989.
Okay. So that
was... I was there when the Hogs and everybody was there. Dexter Manley, Charles Mann.
Yeah. The year before. Did you play with Vernon Beard? He was a defensive back.
I was there
back.
When he was there as well, yes.
Yeah, that's my guy, B. That's my dude. Yeah, we played together. Guy. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So, small world, really looking forward to making these connections here with the two of you and, hopefully being able to maintain these and to make them not only successful for us, but, for other people in our network. So I'm pumped up.
Thank you guys, too, for chatting, because we're always looking for these inspirational stories you know, transitioning careers and what have you. And I mean, I think this would be great content for our podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, it's our pleasure to be here.
Yes, indeed.
My journey started in Brooklyn, New York. You know, I'm an only child of a wonderful mom and dad who dealt with me. You know, I was told that I was spoiled, but just not spoiled rotten. So I still got the belt once in a while. But, you know, growing up in Brooklyn taught me a lot. And I realized then that eventually you have to make it on your own, and you got to try to survive. I got through the streets without any major issues, and that led me to a great career in engineering. I'm a product of UMass Amherst, class of 87. Did a little football in my freshman year, but I realized right then if you didn't have a scholarship, you were just going to be a punching bag. So I stuck with my engineering. You know, further into my life, I came back to New York. And then I lived my dream of working right down the street from where I was raised. I got the chance to work for two engineering firms. One, I was under contract. One was a salary position. But that also led me back into football, and all along I've been coaching football. Well, for high school in Amherst, Mass, for high school in Georgetown, Massachusetts, before I came back to New York. I've been coaching some semi-pro teams along the way at different positions. After I left Boston, I joined the New York Sharks women's pro football team. And I was with the Boston women's football team prior to that, actually. So that's how I got my contacts. And then from there, I was coaching with a junior college down in South Jersey. And that's where I actually met Le Bryant, which we call him LB. You know, he's very affectionately known as LB. And I didn't know that he was my fraternity brother. You know, him and I both pledged Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated. We eventually went on to Philadelphia and coached there for about 2 years. And then we said, hey, listen, now that I moved to Jersey, during this journey, which is where LB lives, we said that we need to bring a team to Jersey, and there was a need for it. And then we created our own team, and we're in the midst of it now. You know, tryouts are going on.
Just going back, was this just a conversation that, you know, when you guys connected, you found out that you were fraternity brothers, or how did that come up?
Well, I was, I'll let LB finish it up, but I'll say like this. I was hired to be a defensive coordinator for the Jersey Coast Jaguars, which was a junior college down in South Jersey. And we were looking for a defensive line coach, and we were just getting mini camp started or training camp started. And LB knows the owner of the, or the person that started the JC program. And I'll let him take it from there to see how he got involved. But, you know, LB, what was the gentleman's name? Because I always forget the guy's name.
His name is Monroe Brown.
Right.
And so that's how we met, you know. Mm-hmm. He questioned me about my paraphernalia in my truck. And I'm like, who are you talking about? And he was like, that's my frat. And that's how we got to be brothers. And It was an instant connection because we were like-minded people, you know. We're all about technique and the training. An aspect of it, and that'll take care of the game part of it if you do the practice and you learn your technique the right way. So because of that, you know, we realized that, you know what, we got a lot in common. And again, like I said, that's when he introduced me to women's football.
But during this time outside of football, I still kept ties to my engineering, and I was able to become a founder or co-founder of a company called Rasco.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
As far as your engineering skill set and experience, how does that play a role in your coaching?
That's a great question, Brian. I really haven't been asked that my entire career. I've never had anybody ask me like that. Well, the way I look at it is you know, there are certain standards and disciplines in engineering that can't be compromised. You know, it's like a math problem. It's numbers. 2 + 2 = 4, period. Whereas in life, football especially, things constantly change. But even within that change, you need discipline and you need standards. And that's how that comes together with me. So it allows me to focus on the thing that LB
mentioned earlier, why we definitely get along coaching is details and technique. And that's how engineering plays that role with me in football. We are slaves to the technique portion of sports. I am slaves to the technique portions of my own engineering career.
That's great. And LeBron, why don't you give us a little overview of your background as well?
Well, like I said earlier, you know, I'm from Salisbury, Maryland. All my life, we considered that the country. So in the country, during the summer, we worked hard in construction, lawn and garden, or play sports. I was lucky enough to play sports for most of the summer. The only bad part about playing sports is the coach picked you up and he knew your parents and had permission to tighten you up on the field if you didn't do right. I left Salisbury. I went to James M. Bennett High School. Let me slow down a little bit. Where I got a scholarship to Delaware State University now. And for football for 4 years, I went there. I was introduced to a whole nother level of the game and the team concept. While I was at college, I met my wife, my lovely wife of 30 years, which we have two great kids and I have two grandkids, you know, so that keeps me on my toes. I left college and I went and played professional football for several years with the Washington Redskins and mostly out in Canada with the Ottawa Rough Riders and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Once I retired from football, I was actually back in my wife's hometown in New Jersey watching football at the high school. And I saw a lot of the kids, the big kids, all sitting on the sideline, not getting in the game. So I said something to my wife about, you know, I should go out there and help them. And lo and behold, one of the coaches came over and asked me to volunteer. So then that's how I got into the transition from professional football into coaching. And that was a great, great transition because it helped me to develop my coaching style and patience and understanding with younger adults.
So LB, you were out there in Art Shell territory.
Yeah, out there, loving it out there.
That's excellent. Wow. And you know, with respect to the engineering piece, I don't want to get too weird, but, you know, football, you start talking about things like angles. You start talking about things like leverage. I mean,
exactly.
Rich, football is a very, very science and engineering type sport, and many people don't realize that. And again, I don't want to get too weird, but when you start looking at the mathematics, the football field itself is actually coded to a circle. And people don't really realize that because you got 100 yards, but then when you add the end zones, you got 120 yards, and then each yard is, there you go. And each yard is 3 feet. So you take that three and you multiply it by 120 and you get 360. So now, you know, football is just like life. You got that 360 degree circle. It's a game of life. There's a pie. There's a pie in there somewhere too. You score a touchdown six, then you convert to seven, and you got 22 people on the field. So, you know, 22 over seven is pie. So, I mean, when you start really looking into football, is much deeper than a game. Much deeper than a game.
Hey, LB, I think Michael Daniels wants a job.
Yeah.
I was gonna recommend before too long. This be the intro.
I'm gonna have to make him vice president of engineering operations or something.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if some of those numbers would explode my brain.
Mike, that was money. Wow. That's damn. So deep. It was funny being a, you know, I talked to LB and Richard about this, being a broken down linebacker. The coaches talked about angles so much. Right. And it was one of those things that you could almost rest assured if you had your proper read and took the angle right, it was going to work. And that goes back to some of the truths that you're saying, Richard, in terms of the fundamentals. And what Mike was saying as well. So no, I love that.
Yeah, you got to coach some of our Raider defensive backs on angles and Jonathan Abrams.
The entire Falcons football team, please. Clinic, please.
And it's interesting when we take that and look at stepping off the field and looking at things that make those individuals in the boardroom, in the office, stand out from their peers. LB, you mentioned it. I mean, and that's one of the things that attracted me to Todd and Brian, is their approach to their work was the same approach that an excellent ball player would take. You know, they were always doing things to improve themselves. They were raising the bar. LB, right. They had that desire. So, So talk to us a little bit about, you know, when you transition out of the game, LB, how you were able to use some of those things you learned on the field to be an excellent football player. How were you able to apply those off the field
for success? I tell you, the biggest part of transitioning from my experience to teach them what I drew on was the good coaches. You know, all through football, you know, from Pop Warner to the highest level, it's all about the coaches. A lot of people think that, you know, all these great players are just great players. Someone saw that greatness in them and helped develop it. So when I first started coaching, that's what I drew from. What was my coach? What was my one of my biggest things? One of the biggest things the coaches always put on us was hard work, dedication, and commitment. So that's how I went into it. I every day I was on time. Every day I made sure that each kid or each person I was around understood football, understood the techniques and what it took to be a good player, and how you had to go about being a good team member. You know, because a lot of people think it's an individual game. No, it's a team game. There's no I in team. So that's the mindset I came in with. You know, I'm always building that group. You know, right now in the Women's Football League, you know, the defenses that I've always coached has been known as dog team. So wherever I go, those young ladies, they're always reminding me dog team for life. Even with our new adventure, those young ladies that have since left our old team are now reaching out. You're starting something new, dog team for life. We got you, coach. We're coming.
Amen. That's right. That's right.
And Richard, so it's now the inverse of the question that Brian asked you. You know, Brian asked you how the coaching helped the engineering. So, you know, I'd like to maybe ask a different question from that. You know, how has your experience in football, you know, helped you off the field with respect to, you know, how you were able to conduct yourself and, you know, become a leader within the engineering field?
Well, the one thing
that... Are you talking to me? Oh, okay, you're talking to Rich.
Yeah, so, well, you know, we're as one anyway, LB, so
right.
Whoever takes the floor, it's all good, right?
So, yeah, but I was going to say it helped me in the school environment as well, but go
exactly.
ahead.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's a great question, Michael, and I have an easy answer for you. LB will tell you he's been hearing it. It's probably like a broken record to him. I am a true believer of preparation. My motto has always been, if you fail to prepare, then you will not be able to succeed. So my whole thing is preparation, study. Allows you to get to the test, to get to the answers, to get to the solution. So how it's helped me in my world off the field is, like LB said before, being on time, preparing. Everything you do in life is about preparation. Even if you go on a date with a young lady, you have to prepare for that. You got to have money. You got to have gas in your car. You got to know what you're going to wear. You know, even if you go to work, you got to have a schedule. You got to have a plan. You can't do anything successfully without a plan. The other piece of that is I've also learned that success is not a destination, it's a journey. So I'm never slowing down. I'm never satisfied. So this is an example of why LB and I, at the age we are now, are starting this football team, because we weren't satisfied with just coaching. You know, we have built that platform. We leveraged out our talent And our reputation stands very strong. Like he mentioned about the dog team, we even have players from other teams who hope that we come to their city or that we can move and go coach with their team. You know, we've coached all-star teams together in this women's league. But all that has been about preparation. And I am to take a word from LB, I'm a dog when it comes to preparation. And LB tells everybody, listen, I may not be the head coach because I'm not doing all that crap, all those little things that Rich does. That's what Rich do. That's how he gets down. He gets all the details. And then LB comes and cleans it up, you know, because then he comes with the with everything else. And that's how come we work together so well. And we never step on each other's toes because we know what we're trying to get done.
Yeah, my question's, starting out in this professional women's league, how have you guys been able to transition not only coaching, females when you don't necessarily have a lot of feeder schools, you don't know, you know, necessarily their football skills or mentality. How do you guys go about motivating those individuals? Is it different than motivating men or young men?
You want me to start off, LB? Then I'll let you clean it up?
No, let me start off because you talk okay. A lot more than me. So let me
not today.
I would say for me, they're already motivated. They're at a higher level of motivation because they didn't have that Pop Warner high school, all the coaching and all those clinics and everything in their football journey. For the most part, a lot of the ladies is starting football. They've been in love with football from early childhood, but their first experience to organized football is at the age of 21 and older. So you take those years of wanting to be out there, wanting to be a part of something, the energy is there. What buys them all the way in is the technique and the proper coaching. It's almost like getting a blank canvas, and how good you are as a coach affects how good she is as a player, because she's having to go with almost everything the coaches are saying because she doesn't have that DNA, Pop Warner and all of that with them.
Absolutely. And they don't have bad habits.
So you're getting correct. A clean slate, really.
Exactly. Most of their bad habits are coming from the coaching that they're getting.
Right. Or the good habits, hopefully. Yes. So to piggyback on that, one thing I've learned, because you know, people ask me all the time, what's the difference between coaching men and coaching women? But we definitely treat them as football players, number one. And they want that. But they also don't want coaches to coddle them because they're women. Yeah. So if I'm going to smack a guy over the head because he did a play wrong, a female football player might get the same thing. Okay. If I'm going to raise my voice and yell at a male player, a female player is going to get the same thing. It's not going to change. But the one piece of it that we have to always take into consideration is that we as men will never know the journey that women travel as women in the male dominance in a male dominated society. So we don't know the harassment, the catcalling, and what that does to them, and the you know, secondhand citizen treatment that women get just in general. So now you have women trying to play a sport that's dominated by men, trying to make a name for themselves. And you have men, mostly men, coaching them. And so we as men have to understand that we don't know what these women's lives were like growing up. There's a lot of abuse, mental, physical abuse, sexual harassment, all those things. We have to really keep in mind that they trust us. They're trusting men to help them get through this journey. And we can't alter anything. Like, we have to be on point when it comes to maintaining that trust, okay? Because the one thing you have to understand, I can call a guy, you know, I can curse at a guy and call him a B-I-T-C-H, or I can call him asshole. But calling a woman that, it's a little different because she's probably heard that in some derogatory term along her path anyway. So you don't need to remind them. This journey's got to be a positive experience for them. And that's important because if anybody here has been married or been in relationships, once you lose that trust, you're done. So that to me has been probably the biggest challenge. Well, not even challenge, but the thing that I've tried to pass on to my coaches to understand that we are not here to be anybody's boyfriend or husband or anything like that. We're here to coach. And to gain that respect, you have to do these things. And so far, so good.
Each of you has said some very, very interesting things. And, you know, we're always trying to tie it back to, you know, what we can do off the field, because we all of us here know that, I know Todd played basketball in high school. All of us here know that you're going to retire from your sport sooner or later. You're not going to play that forever. So you're going to have to find something else to utilize your time. And I don't want to trivialize what you said, Richard, but you know, the experiences that, you know, women have in our society, again, is something that we will never understand. But again, not trying to trivialize it, I think you guys will understand what I'm saying. I believe that being able to let some of that steam off on the football field, it's okay for you to be aggressive. You know what I mean? It's okay for you to actually let that, and I think that could be therapeutic at times. And again, right. I'm not saying anything against therapy. If someone needs therapy, go to your therapist, but there right. is something therapeutic about football. And I think some of the best players that I've coached as young men and men, they had some issues underneath there. Mm-hmm. They had some anger management, you know, some tough upbringings, and that helped them become mature men on the football field, because it was okay to be an SOB, or to be, as you said, it's okay to be an asshole for 60 minutes here. As long as you know, we can keep it contained. And then once that final whistle blows, you're off the field and you become a young man again.
Right.
Hey, just to bring this up on what Mike's saying, you know, because I really want to ask the question from your perspectives, what do the women get out of playing? But Mike, you hit on it. So often when we play games and go through tough situations collectively, you end up building your, I'm going to use the current term, persona. You're able to become who you want to be based on your effort. And think about it, nicknames, you know, oh my gosh, this person has great hands, you know, this person's a beast and they can hit hard. I mean, it's empowering because you're able to define yourselves oftentimes. So, I mean, what do you think, especially the women that have played with you over the years, what do you think they get out of it and what brings them back?
LB?
Gonna go with the connection, because as we all know, that coach position is not just a coach. He's also your counselor. He's your adopted parent. He's your friend. He's the person that's gonna discipline you. So when you look at the football aspect of this, they're coming back because they feel that they have a connection. They are part of something. They're with like-minded people. They have the support on and off the field. So that's the way I look at it. You know, when we're on that field, when we come to practice, you know, they'll anybody that I've coached will tell you, he's going to chew you behind the whole practice. But if you need to talk to him afterwards, or you having a problem, he'll stop what he's doing and take that moment. If you need him to come past your house, that's what brings them back, you know. Just like when we were in Pop Warner in high school, we went back because the coach was a good coach and it was a mentor mindset.
Absolutely. And let me add to that. I might sum it up a little bit differently, but still on the same path. LB and I have been called assholes by our players too, but they still show up. Okay. So, you know, I've been told I can't stand you or you get on my nerves, coach. But guess what? They still show up because they know that they're being taught the right way and they're being respected and treated fairly. But the other piece to it is this Women's Football League has been around for a long time, people, for over 25 years. As a matter of fact, even in the 70s, they had a little stint back in the 70s. So it's been around, but it's been disorganized for about 25 years now. They're like a cult. It's become like a cult almost. It's their culture. You know, LB and I now have realized that we need to extend our experiences with them in providing off-season football camps, training, which will get them even better at the sport. And they love things like that. They love to be able to travel in large numbers to go play football within their world. And, you know, and that's another reason why a lot of them come back, because they're competitive with each other and they actually care about each other. And that includes the coaches, as LB was saying.
Now, how's the league supported the growth? I mean, obviously you're shaping young women's lives and what have you. That's fantastic, especially on the football field and translation to business and what have you. But how have you guys developed, or the league, how have they developed female coaches or executives?
Great question. Well, let me add this. That's one of, when it comes to the female coaches, that's one of LB and my, that's one of our goals, is to prepare some of these women to actually be coaches. We were very successful with the New York Sharks. There's one young lady, she didn't have a lot of physical talent, but she had a lot of heart and desire. And she actually became the first Black female coach of the NFL as an intern for the New York Jets. And we had another young lady who was a fullback, offensive lineman. She became our O-line coach, and she became eventually a head coach. She took over for a few games when that team went over to London to play in London, and she was head coach for that. And she's got an IT background. She's a very intelligent woman. So that's encouraged all the way through.
And we also have Salida, who's assistant D-line coach with our Tri-State Warriors team at the present.
Absolutely. And she's a former player. And, you know, and she's also one of the board of directors. She's a treasurer for our team. She got a strong background in that. But there's been a push the last maybe 5 years of women empowerment in the sport. It's really been led by Ron Rivera's wife. I can't remember her name. She's very actively involved in these, like, they call it like NFL Women's Summit, or there's like a, you know, this sort of kind of conferences that she's always a part of. And lately there's been a lot of women since Colette got in involved with the Jets. There's been a lot more internships. And now some of the women are actually coaching. And there's going to be some probably moving up in executive roles, hopefully. But that has been because of the push of the league to push the envelope, to push things in a certain direction, like, you know, getting the NFL more involved, you know, and you know, things like that. So, but until we get something like the WNBA has, where they have the NBA on record as being their main source, you know, full support, it's going to take a little bit longer, but they're slowly getting there.
So is there like a mentorship programs, or even if they wanted to get into being an official on-field official, do they, I'm sure they encourage it, but there's no strict plan or feeder system?
No, there is. Actually, yeah. There's, I think one of the games we were in, LB, right? The entire officiating staff was all female. I think the last time we were.
Oh, that's good.
Our last regular season game with the New York Sharks, the entire staff was all women, and the all-star team that we coached in 2014, was all women. But there are programs.
That's when it was just about. That's when it was coming around, when they were leaning more towards that.
Right, and Ron Rivera's wife is one of the advocates for that. But they have yearly conferences, like I was saying earlier, and they push these. Plus, Team USA for football. You know, there's a USA team every so many years, and they travel around the world and play against Denmark and London and Spain and Canada and Mexico. And the USA has dominated that for the past, it's been around for maybe over 10 years now. And those women actually push the envelope further. But the Team USA has been very instrumental in that, in about coaching academies and that sort of thing.
We'll see if it's called out as a G League or, you know, a feeder pool or whatnot. I mean, you really have this entire league and its operations from, like what Ty was saying, from executives to coaches to refs and officiating crews to the people that do field operations. If there's no way of auditioning, how do you ever get to that next level? So I love the fact that you guys have this set up. And I think the goal for a lot of us that are supporters of you is trying to amplify that message of we are a, you know, separate but equal, you know, function that can be that talent pool, that feeder pool for higher level activity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what I'd like to see is taking it a step further, as we discussed that, you know, everyone retires from the game at some point in time. I would like to see, Todd mentioned the feeder program. I would like to see a feeder from, you know, your teams in your league have some type of development program that will prepare these women, if they need it, prepare some of your players to transition off the field. And I know they're not being paid millions of dollars, so certainly many of them have jobs and careers, but if they want to use some of their skills that they've gained on the field to maybe transition into a new career and attack something else, you know, I'd like to see some type of bridge program built between the league and individuals like Todd, Brian, and myself to help those women who want it, you know, get those skills to transition into a new career endeavor.
LB, are you smiling inside when he brought this up?
This is what we've been talking about.
This has been our plan. And, this has been what we've been preparing for. Exactly. I'll let LB talk about some of the development part, but LB and I are also part of a group called Strategic Links, and Brian's involved with that also. You really trying to bring that vehicle to these women and on our team or the league as a opportunity for their talent off the field to be discovered and for them to transition into, you know, having better resources to become executives, to become doctors, to become lawyers, to become entrepreneurs. Strategic Links is a huge entity that brings the entrepreneur spirit to a level to like a village almost, where we hand to hand help each other out and we move these things forward for people who may need a little push. And we're taking football and we're using that. So we're going to introduce these women to these sort of ventures as they keep going through life. So we're not going to just play football. But there's a piece before that LB loves, and that's the youth development, LB, right?
Right. Doing the training for the younger generation, 8 to 16, giving them an opportunity and a sound fundamental upbringing, or so to speak, into the sports. What we're trying to do right now is, well, we're not trying. It's in the process of being put together. We're doing a flag football concept with the younger group in connection with Gridiron Edge, which is also a training technique company that we're also involved in as well, which open up these camps to the younger generation where we go over all the fundamentals and techniques and things of that nature.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on what would be the most beneficial from a professional development standpoint for a lot of the players that you work with?
Well, the things that they need kind of go hand in hand with the things we've been talking about already. They need leadership. They need a helping hand or someone who believes in them. They need to know that these things are very much possible. So that's happening right in front of their eyes. You know, all these changes with women in sports and being successful in sports at different levels, not just on the field. It's like you have to have like a constant reminder that the opportunity is there. So it goes back to what I said about success is a journey, not a destination. It has to be emphasized that there's nothing that you can't do and you have to keep going forward. And there's people out here that want you to succeed. But the biggest thing I think, other than the football piece, is showing them other women who are successful, whether it's football or not, in the areas that they want to succeed. Like, I still don't think women, just like the Black and Brown community has this issue also, is that we don't see enough of us doing the things that we know that we're capable of or being, or doing the things that we know that we're capable of being. This exposure is golden, and it just pushes the narrative forward.
I would say trust. Trust is that component that so many of them have been burnt with, and they're always looking to believe and know that once they put their trust in something that is not going to be betrayed, it's going to help them to continue to grow.
Absolutely.
Great point.
Thank you for listening to Skillsharp. This has been part one of our interview with Richard Harrigan and LeBryant Robinson, co-owners of the women's football franchise, the Tri-State Warriors. Please tune into part two.
Send your questions and comments to podcast@skill-sharp.com. You can follow us on Twitter at SkillSharp1 or visit us online at www.skill-sharp.com. This is Mike Daniels signing off for Todd Nakasone, Brian Wright, Alyssa Pruitt, Will Kelso, and the rest of the team at SkillSharp Studios. Until next time, stay sharp.